The views expressed on the Cystic Fibrosis Podcast are that of Jerry Cahill and his guests, and not necessarily those of the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Nothing in the Cystic Fibrosis Podcast should be considered medical advice. Such advice can only be given by a physician who is experienced with cystic fibrosis. The Boomer Esiason Foundation, Jerry Cahill, and his guests cannot be held responsible for any damage which may result from using the information on this podcast without the permission of your medical doctor. You're listening to the Cystic Fibrosis Podcast presented by the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Now, here is Jerry Cahill.
Welcome to Jerry Cahill's Living, Breathing, Succeeding CF Podcast Program. This show, Life on the Other Side, Post-Double Lung Transplant, was made possible through an unrestricted educational grant from Allergan to the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Today we'll meet Liz Kalb, 37 years old, from a small town in Oklahoma. Liz is now the recipient of a beautiful pair of gently pre-owned lungs as of March 18, 2016. Liz still works for the state, but recently started a new challenge with a different agency. Liz is still searching for as many adventures as possible. Liz is living, breathing, succeeding, and loving life. It's interesting that I did a podcast with Liz a little over 3 years ago when breathing was a struggle, and here I am back 3 years later, and Liz is loving life and doing quite well post-double lung transplant. Hi, Liz. How are you today?
I'm fabulous. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. Wow, it's been over 3 years. Last time we spoke, you were doing your Dirty 30 kind of tough mudder races and doing them with oxygen tanks, and here you are 3 years and 3 months later approximately, and with a beautiful set of new lungs and moving forward in a great way. That's awesome.
Thank you. Feels awesome.
Well, Liz, let's just quickly to refresh some of the people. Tell me a little bit about yourself growing up with CF, and then we'll get into life on the other side, post-transplant.
Okay. I grew up in California. I was diagnosed when I was 3 years old. I had pneumonia and didn't go away. As I grew up, my health was never really very good. I think maybe the highest my lungs ever functioned was about 50%, and then it just went downhill from there. But I didn't let it slow me down any more than I absolutely had to be slowed down. I spent a lot of time in the hospital. But aside from that, stayed really active. I like to be outdoors, travel, all that kind of thing. Moved to Oklahoma in 1995 and have been here ever since. Worked for the state for 13 years. I got my bachelor's at University of Oklahoma in 2004. My master's at East Central University in 2014. Just recently started working for a different state agency, and just going 100 miles an hour.
Well, that's great. Well, congratulations. Things are moving at warp speed for you. That's
feels
great.
Like it.
Well, let's talk about life with CF pre-transplant. I know you spoke a little bit about it, but I really want to talk about, like, what was it like toward the end and when you were getting to that point where, you know, you weren't having a great quality of life and you decided to pursue a double lung transplant, that whole area?
Okay, it was a slow but steady decline over the years. I feel like I fought losing lung function in tooth and nail to make it go as slow as possible, but you know, it was inevitable. In 2011, I got pretty sick. I got a mycobacterium and it knocked me down pretty good. So that was when I was first referred to Barnes Jewish Hospital to the lung transplant program. I stabilized out after going to be evaluated that first time, and did not have to go back and see them again until 2014. The end of, I want to say, 2013 was when I had to start wearing oxygen all the time. I had been previously sleeping with it, but I had to start wearing it during the day as well. And then in 2014, I went back to be evaluated again. And from 2014 on, I was going every 3-6 months, sometimes a year spaced out, depending on what was going on. But my needs were becoming were increasing. I had to start wearing a CPAP or poor man's BiPAP. It looked like a BiPAP, but it was a CPAP. I was in and out of the hospital more frequently, that kind of thing. I started getting fevers pretty frequently. That was kind of my tell for when I was experiencing an exacerbation. I started getting fevers and just really run down. I continued to work the whole time, but it was difficult. I had a great support system at work. They took really good care of me, enabling me to continue working. So not this past Christmas, but the Christmas before, I went into respiratory failure and was ambulanced from OU Medical Hospital to in Oklahoma City to St. Louis to Barnes. And then I went into acute kidney failure because of all the antibiotics. I've had kidney disease for a number of years, and then all the antibiotics just sent my kidneys into, they were angry. And Barnes was able to stabilize my bones and kidneys, and I went back home. I went up back to Barnes for a follow-up the next month, in February. And because of all of these complications, diabetes, issues with blood clots in my chest, high blood pressure, the kidney issues, I had already been told I wasn't really a very good candidate for lungs. They didn't know what my quality of life would be like post-transplant. So once my kidney function got to be so bad, that's when they more or less said, "We're sorry, we don't think you're going to be a good candidate." So I went home, then I tanked again, so I went back to St. Louis, and out of the blue, they said, "Well, it's time, we're going to list you." Didn't see it coming, because I didn't think that they were going to, you know, allow me to be listed because of all those circumstances, but they listed me.
Wow.
It was a wild ride. It feels like it took forever to get to that point, and then once I got there, it happened very fast.
So when I did the last podcast with you, that was in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you were starting to, you just done that race, the Dirty 30.
Yep.
I remember the picture there with you in the mud with your oxygen tank on and the cannula. So after that, you then started to really go down a bit.
Yes. I had, the other thing that happened, I had a lot of hemoptysis where my lungs would bleed frequently. There were times where it would happen several times in one day. Almost every night when I would try to go to bed, I had several bronchial artery embolizations where they would have to go in and basically solder my lungs to keep them from continuing to bleed. It was just one thing after another that was saying, all right, it's getting close to time. And
wow. Well, this is amazing for me to be here, you know, three months later, and here you are on the other side. You know, we spoke about how hard it was to breathe back then, but you kept exercising, and here you are now, and with a beautiful set of new lungs. It's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's talk about post-transplant now and kind of living on the other side. I guess the first question that I have is, what were you thinking about when you got that call and you went into surgery before you went under? Like, it's. I know for me it was a very surreal experience, but what was it like?
That is a perfect description. It was very surreal. I got the call standing out in front of Starbucks on St. Patrick's Day, 2016.
What were you drinking?
A latte.
Yep,
my mom and I were just putting money into the parking meter, and the call came, and I wasn't expecting it because I had been talking with my coordinator about ordering Kaestin and getting that coordinated between the pharmacy and their office, and it was, a lot was going on with that, so it was a lot of phone calls. And instead, it was one of the coordinators that said, "Well, we've got a potential set of lungs for you," and it took a minute to register, like, that's not what I expected at all. And she asked if I was interested. Of course I was interested. So she said, "Well, go ahead and come on up to the hospital." So Mom and I went inside, got our lattes, told the barista behind the counter that I was going to get new lungs, which he was sort of surprised to hear. And
not everybody walks in there every day and says, "I'm getting new lungs,"
right,
or a new heart.
Right.
Wow.
And so Mom dropped me off at the hospital, and then she went back to our apartment, which we'll get back to that later, to get the camera, because I had already begged the transplant team to allow me to give somebody in the operating room a camera so they could take pictures of the surgery. And so she went home to get my camera, and they started the transplant pre-op testing, some last-minute x-rays, started some antibiotics, stuff like that. It all felt very surreal, oddly. I was not scared. I think I was more excited than anything. I know my mind was going a mile a minute. My family, dad drove up, my aunt and uncle drove up. It was, we were all kind of hanging out in my room, just, you know, like, wow, this is really happening. This is, not only did we not think that this was going to happen, that I was going to be declared eligible, but I was only on the list for 2 weeks. And so that was
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Wow. It was incredible. It was so fast. Did not expect that. And then the morning of the surgery, when they wheeled me back, you know, I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, this is it. This could be it. And I know it's really uncommon to not survive the surgery. I know that that was a possibility could happen. And so I thought to myself, well, you know, I could, you know, get put to sleep and I could die. This could be it. This could be the end of my life. And oddly, it was a really peaceful feeling. Like, there was no fear. There was no trepidation. I felt really peaceful about it. I prayed about it. And then I said to the transplant team, everybody that was in there, this was after saying, please take all the gory pictures you can. I thanked them all for what they were getting ready to do. Said a prayer for my donor's family, my donor, and then I went under. And
that was... Wow. And then what was it like the first time you woke up after your transplant?
So before transplant, I had been told by several people that when I wake up, I might not know that I have new lungs, because sometimes, you know, if the lungs aren't good, then you wake up and you're still you with your original lungs, and that could happen. Or because of, you know, the meds that you're on, you're not really entirely aware. So I knew going into it that I might not know. But when I woke up, I immediately knew. I don't know how I knew. I don't know why I would have known, but I did. I just knew. And of course, I was ventilated, so I had the tube down my throat, which was not comfortable, but a lot of self-talk helped there. And plus, I was heavily medicated, so I wasn't panicky or anything like that. And I just kept telling myself, you know, don't fight it. Just let it do its thing. It's breathing for you. You're fine. But anyway, back to what I was thinking. I felt kind of a heaviness, and I don't know if it was just like because I had blankets all the way up, or if it was, you know, the bandages or whatever it was, or the tubes, I don't know, but I just knew. I knew there were new lungs in there, and I was so excited, and I immediately, like when my eyes popped open, I kind of looked around, and, you know, my parents were in there, and I started moving one of my hands to gesture for a phone because I wanted to use the texting to be able to communicate, because I didn't know how else to be able to say, hey, I'm good, you know, don't worry about me, I'm good. And when my sister had her transplant, which is a whole other big deal, it took her a while to come out of to become conscious again and come out of the
anesthesia.
Thank you. Yeah. Anesthesia. And so my parents didn't know what to expect with me, and so when I just wake up like that, I think I was cognizant to, like, I want to make sure that they know I'm good. And then I wanted to call people and say, like, FaceTime to say, hey, I'm good, and hold the thumbs up sign. And
how long ago was that after the transplant? How many hours?
You know, that night, maybe?
Really?
I think it was that night. Yeah.
I was like out in a medically induced coma. They kept me under for like 48 hours after the transplant because I was fighting.
Yeah. My sister was out for a week.
Wow.
Yeah. It was tough. It was tough on everybody.
And what was the recovery like?
It was surprisingly smooth. I didn't know what to expect going into it, again, because of the kidneys and the other complications, blood pressure, diabetes. I didn't know if, you know, my kidneys were going to immediately fail or something like that. I was up walking, I think the next day or something, and I, because I'm stubborn and whatnot, I didn't want to just do my one lap around the hall. I wanted to do extra. And for me, I think the hardest part was the step down room. You know, in the CF community, we're all taught that we are in our own rooms and, you know, we don't have roommates or anything like that. So when they moved me out of ICU, they moved me into a step down room where there was a whole lot of other people. We were just separated by curtains. And I didn't really, I think they probably told me that was going to happen, but maybe it just didn't really register. So I was horribly uncomfortable because I'm thinking I've got new lungs and I'm surrounded by all these people who are making all these horrible noises. And that was a little scary for me. They ended up moving me across the hall to a less congested part of the step-down room where it was quieter and people weren't like immediately surrounding me, and it was a lot better over there.
Now, what was it like being in a strange city and, you know, hospital? Because you had to relocate for the transplant.
Yes, I had to relocate. I'd spent a whole lot of time with, you know, my nurses and doctors and techs and everybody at OU Medical. I was real familiar with them, real comfortable with them. And even though I'd been in Barnes on their CF / transplant floor twice before, that's for if you go back into the hospital for any reason after your transplant. You go to different floors immediately after the transplant. So I was with new people that I didn't know, out of my comfort zone. And going into that, I wasn't sure how I would feel about it. I'm kind of a creature of comfort. And so I was a little apprehensive about what that was going to be like, but everybody was so great. The nurses were all so kind. There was this lovely tech that would come in every day and wash my hair for me, and everybody was great. So that discomfort just immediately dissipated. And as far as being in an unfamiliar city, I missed my friends back home and, you know, the comforts in my own home. But I love adventure, so I love being in a new city, and I love St. Louis. I didn't know how I was going to feel about St. Louis, but I loved St. Louis. And after I got out of the hospital, I drove my poor mom all over that city because I wanted to explore everything and see everything. So I just took advantage of having somewhere new to explore and get to know. And
how long did you have to live up there post-transplant?
I had to be there for 3 months. Barnes Jewish is really big on pulmonary rehab, both pre and post transplant. So I would go up and walk on the treadmill and lift weights every single day, a weekday, not during the weekend, of course, but every day. And they're really strict about that. I loved it because I like to be active, and plus I think it made a really huge impact on my recovery. I feel like I got better quicker because I was constantly pushing myself. And even outside of pulmonary rehab, you know, we were going to the zoo, we were going to museums, we were going to parks. I mean, anywhere and everywhere to, you know, rack up as many miles on the new Fitbit that I got, because it just made the recovery smoother.
Great. That's really good. Now, you know, obviously, you know, we have CF and we now both have double lung transplants. But there's always other obstacles on the other side. I mean, on the other side of, you know, transplant. I guess the question I would have is what barriers have you overcome, do you feel, post-transplant?
Before transplant, I wanted to always go and do and never slow down. I wanted to keep up with everybody else, even when that wasn't physically possible to do. I would push myself too far in wanting to do that. Now that I've got these great new lungs and my lung function is so high and I feel so good, I want to go and do everything. And sometimes, I guess it's still a barrier that I'm trying to overcome, but in a different kind of way, because it's hard for me to slow down. I just want to go and do. I used to almost feel anxious if I went to bed too late at night because I knew that I would be exhausted, even more exhausted the next day. And since transplant, I've discovered that if I need to, I can go to bed later and I can get less hours of sleep and I can be fine the next day, whereas before it would completely do me in. And so I have to be really careful now not to get in the habit of getting too little sleep because I can. Because I know it will eventually catch up with me because I still get tired. And, you know, I know that I'm so vulnerable to all the bugs and germs and whatnot, you know, people coughing and being sick, and I have to just be super careful about that and not letting myself get too run down to where my already suppressed immune system is even more threatened because I'm pushing myself too hard.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So you're preaching to the choir when it comes to about slowing down. But I guess another question too, so you know, you're overcoming barriers, and what about, I mean, obviously things change post-transplant. They change for the better. You can breathe and, you know, you're not walking around with oxygen. But what about barriers or obstacles? Is there any in the way of your social life and sports?
I have to be really careful just when I am out and about, like what I'm doing, where I'm going. Like if I'm out with some friends and we're going to eat something, going out to eat somewhere, well, if it's a buffet, I'm out because we can't do buffets because, you know, food temperature, sitting out, and plus people are gross. If you ever watch people at a buffet, people are just gross. So, and I was a germaphobe beforehand, and now I'm even more of one, you know, constant hand sanitizer, stuff like that. Sports, on the other hand, like before transplant, I liked to hike. I had to do it much shorter intervals and with oxygen and feeling like I was holding people back because, you know, I had to walk at a snail's pace, so they have to be patient and be at a snail's pace with me. And now I can go and hike long distances and feel great, but I have to be really extra careful about sunscreen. I have to be extra careful about bug spray because of, you know, ticks. I have to go on antibiotics. If I get bit by a tick, I have to immediately go on antibiotics. So there's these other precautions that I have to think about, that before, if I had a tick, I'd just pick it off and, you know, scratch the itchy tick bite for a week. Now it's 10 days of antibiotics. And so I have to keep that kind of stuff in mind now.
Yeah, so you're just more aware of surroundings and stuff, and even like so you're doing sports, you just have to be a little bit more conscious,
right?
Of yeah,
right.
Now what does it feel like with your to have this life, this new life? I mean, physically, emotionally, spiritually, I guess it all comes into play.
It feels like a miracle every day. I initially, early on, after transplant, you know, because I was wearing oxygen, I was sleeping with the CPAP, and it was such a habit where, like, if I were to go to use a tissue, I'm trying to pull my oxygen out of the way, but there's no oxygen anymore. Or if I get up in the middle of the night and I have to take off my CPAP, then when even today, a year and a half later, I'll get back in bed in the middle of the night and I'll be like reaching for the CPAP, and I'm, oh, I don't use that anymore. Or I'll climb stairs and I'll expect that that's going to just take it out of me and nothing happens. Or I'll impulsively reach for my inhaler that I had to use almost constantly before transplant, and I don't need that anymore. And I still have those moments all the time, and getting used to being able to do stuff. Before, my appetite was not so good because I was so sick all the time, so food just didn't really taste good. And then when I would eat, I had an even harder time breathing. So now I would order a plate of food and I'd look at that and I'd think, oh my gosh, I can't eat all that food. And next thing you know, like, I've scraped it clean and I'm ready for dessert, and then I'm ready to go get coffee after the dessert. And so, like, the mental getting used to this is a totally different way of life. And before transplant, I felt like my life was kind of on hold because I knew I was dying. And so it's hard to really plan for the future. I couldn't consider a job change. I couldn't, you know, there are so many things that I just felt like I was on hold. And now I kind of feel like the sky's the limit. You know, if I just want to hop on an airplane and go travel somewhere, spend a weekend somewhere just for the heck of it, you know, throw my pills in a bag and, you know, my insulin, stuff like that. But it's not the same kind of effort and drama that it used to be before transplant. And it feels like a miracle every day.
And what about spiritually?
I don't know, that's hard to answer. Before transplant, you know, I would see God's glory in, like, everything, like, you know, a bird singing, or the way that the clouds would look in the sky, or, you know, the kindness from some random stranger, and seeing it all post-transplant, and the fact that I'm even here alive to see it, just makes everything, like, you know, this is such a gift, and it's overwhelming to, you know, I'll be doing the most mundane thing, like, say, this past Christmas, not that Christmas shopping is necessarily mundane, but the last couple of years before this past year, you know, in 2015, I'm in the hospital with respiratory failure and kidney failure. The year before that, I had to do mostly online shopping, or if I did try to go out, I was so sick and exhausted by the end of it that I couldn't even function the next day. And it had been like that for a couple of years. And then this last year, I got to the end of the day of Christmas shopping, and it occurred to me that, oh my gosh, for 8 hours, I've been out running all over the countryside trying to hit these different sales, different sales, and I'm not exhausted at all. Like, I still have energy, and this is so surreal to me, especially considering how I spent last Christmas and the Christmas before. But then immediately following that thought that I have just constantly is, while I'm feeling this, my donor's family is for the first time experiencing their holiday, you know, this holiday without their loved one. And so it's kind of that double-sided.
Yeah, it's kind of bittersweet.
Mm-hmm.
What barriers do you still want to break?
Well, I want to do everything. I want to go everywhere. I want to do everything. I want to, I mean, I've done a couple of 5Ks, but I want to actually run one, like competitively run one. And I want to jump out of an airplane. Sorry, mom and dad. I want to paraglide. I want to go rock climbing. You know, all of these things that I never would have been able to do or wanted to do but couldn't do before. Like, I want to do all that now. And I just want to take advantage. I feel like every day is a bonus day. It's kind of like my little mantra in the back of my head. Every day is a bonus day. And so I just want to take advantage of every opportunity I have to, you know, experience how great life is.
That's so fabulous. Have you met your donor family?
No, not yet. I'd like to.
Do you know anything about them, or you wrote a letter? Or?
I know that my donor is 35 years old and was a woman.
And what would you say to your donor and the donor family right now if you could meet them?
Wow, I would thank my donor for being an organ donor. I know some people, it's a big decision for some people, and for other people it's just a simple check the box and, you know, why not? And whatever her motivation was for doing it, I would want her to know how much I appreciate it, because if she hadn't agreed to be an organ donor, then I probably wouldn't be here today. I was so close to the end, and I, especially with the difficult circumstances, I barely even got to be eligible. I just all fit together so perfectly. And so I want her to know how much I appreciate her selfless gift. And to her family, I would want her family to know that I'm doing everything I can to honor her, that their loved one's gift to me, and that I'm doing everything that I can, you know, to take advantage of it, to, you know, just live life. I know it sounds cheesy, but live life to the fullest. I want to, you know, just honor that gift.
Well, you know, I can say, Liz, you know, it was an honor to meet you 3 years, 3 months ago, and it's an honor and a blessing to be here again with you today.
Likewise.
Doing a podcast and, you know, seeing here and being here with you on the other side, because, I mean, it is such a gift of life, and there's so much out there that you, more that you can do in life, which is fabulous, and you wouldn't be able to do that without your donor and the family. That there's unconditional love and gift that they've given us.
Mm-hmm.
What is every day like for you now?
Well, right off the bat, I wake up in the morning and I don't have to do a whole string of breathing treatments and vesting like I used to have to do. It got into where when I showered, I had to sit on a shower chair and then rest afterward. Blow dry my hair, rest some more, get dressed, rest some more, and I'd finally roll into work at like 10 or 11 o'clock because I was so exhausted. I don't have any of that anymore. I can drink my coffee and just be happy to be alive and awake and not be exhausted. To wake up without feeling that immediate exhaustion is amazing. And I work a lot of hours, and I do it without being exhausted. I can walk around now and not get tired. That was one thing before transplant. It had been so long that I didn't get exhausted just by walking from one room to the next. I mean, it was that bad that I would watch other people walk around and think, wow, how are they doing that? And I would know, like, it's not logical to be exhausted from just walking a short distance, but it became so foreign to me that I didn't know how people could do it. And to be able to go back to that, where I was, you know, a long, long time ago to where I could, you know, function, was just incredible. And then now, so of course I want to take advantage of it. Even when I'm not hiking, I go on a lot of walks. That's kind of what I do to, one, enjoy this gift because I can, because I can physically do it, and because it's just such a good stress relief, and it's healthy, and it's important to me to you know, take care of these lungs. I want to do everything I can to keep them in as good a shape as possible. So I like to just get out and walk, rack up my activity minutes on my Fitbit. And so I just, as far as treatment, I take a handful of pills, pretty good sized handful, but you know, a handful of pills in the morning, immunosuppressants, enzymes when I eat, blood pressure meds, a whole bunch of vitamins. And then I do that again at night. And I don't do all the breathing treatments. I do one a month to help prevent a specific kind of pneumonia that post-transplant people are susceptible to. That's it. I'm careful with, you know, sunscreen and bug spray and germs. If I go into airports or pharmacies or hospital environments, I wear a mask. But life is so much easier, like just physically easier to function and do. I can make my own bed now, change my own sheets, whereas I didn't have the energy to do that before. I had to have somebody do that for me. And so all of these things that might seem like mundane chores are now almost a blessing because I can actually do it.
Well, that's phenomenal. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have cystic fibrosis and are, you know, facing the possibility of a double lung transplant or heading in that direction. Do you have any thoughts or advice for people that are awaiting a transplant?
Well, I would encourage people to give it a shot. It's so worth it. There's not any point in this past year and a half that I've regretted it or thought that if it were to all fall apart, if I were to wake up tomorrow morning and it all fell apart, I would want to do it again. Every part of it, any downside has been so minuscule compared to the amazingness of having new lungs. I would encourage anybody who's thinking about it, or and if you're fearful about it, talk to somebody who has gone down this road, because it's amazing. There's nothing like going from being so sick to feeling this good, and especially when you've never felt it like this before.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, right?
So amazing.
Well, I'd like to thank Liz Kalb for sharing her feelings on life post-transplant with CF and being a major inspiration to others facing a double lung transplant, others that are facing bumps in the road with cystic fibrosis. I'd also like to thank Allergan for the unrestricted educational grant, which has made this all possible. Remember, there is power in believing you cannot fail. Thanks, Liz.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Jerry Cahill's Cystic Fibrosis Podcast. If you would like more information on cystic fibrosis or the Boomer Esiason Foundation, visit our website at www.esiason.org.